Western Championship Wrestling. Innovators in television wrestling. With split screen, instant replay, and other technical firsts. The program voted number one by the Wrestling Writers Federation. Join us now for a fast-paced competition of professional wrestling, featuring the top stars from the world's largest governing body, the National Wrestling Alliance.
Yes, beautiful move by Roy Welch. Caught him with a double inside cradle.
I asked the champion, he would not give up. I didn't want to embarrass Ron Fuller by the champion not giving up on his best hold, so I'm actually doing the boy a favor. I'm dropping on him, I dropped a knee on him, and listen, he had a chance. Everybody says I backed John. He was right there, it was just me and him. The champion just rolled over and took advantage of a 1-2-3 count. Now there's the 1-2-3, and the match was over. I just did Ron Fuller a favor. He needed a third operation anyway. He had two already, and three strikes, you're out. Now, he had what they call arthroscopic surgery, and here he comes and jumps on me after I tried to do him a favor. Look at him trying to nail me. Luckily, Ric Flair saw the action there and took that knee down again.
Piece of film that's ever made. I want this thing to be shown every week that this is a fine piece of film here.
Well, it looks to me like a Judas and a Benedict Arnold all wrapped
leave
into one.
Leave that stuff off, Gordon.
Pritchard is a young man with a lot of intestinal fortitude, certainly no question about that. Out against Marty Jannetty right now, one of the Midnight Rockers and Rollers.
Ladies and gentlemen, this tremendous main event, one fall with television time remaining. First of all, making his way to ringside at 229 pounds. The music will tell the story. Would you welcome the Bullet?
Welcome to the Dragon King Wrestling Audio Show. You can visit our website at DragonKingWrestling.com. And now, your host, editor of the Dragon King Wrestling Newsletter, and court-certified expert in pro wrestling, Carl Stern.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Dragon King Wrestling Audio Show for Monday, September the 18th, 2006. Carl Stern here from DragonKingWrestling.com. I want to thank everybody for listening. I want to remind everybody that this week we are doing the tribute to the 1980s territories. This week we've got coming up Ted Allen, the Nightmare. We've got Jimmy Powell, the original Dirty White Boy. We'll be replaying our interview with Robert Fuller and also with Jimmy Valiant this week. And I want to remind everybody this coming Friday night at Zamora Shrine Temple in Birmingham, Alabama, is the Next Wrestle Birmingham show. Headlined by Jeff Jarrett against Dennis Condrey. Jarrett is coming in to replace Jerry Lawler, who had to pull out due to a schedule conflict. But just want to keep everybody aware of that. And the Rick and Steve or Carl show will be Monday afternoon in our usual time slot. Well, today I got a guy who there's no need introducing him because everybody who's followed wrestling in the late 1970s through the 1980s, into the 1990s, going to recognize this name. He was a prolific wrestler throughout the various territories, especially Memphis, Alabama, and Smoky Mountain Wrestling. Later became a very influential and significant trainer with World Wrestling Entertainment. Dr. Tom Pritchard, how you doing, Dr. Tom?
Doing great, Carl. Thanks for having me on today. How are you is the question.
Yeah, I'm doing outstanding. It's been a very busy week, but we're getting through it, man. And, gosh.
Oh, well, no, it's actually just beginning. Anyway.
I hear you. Well, this is your first time on our show, and I want to thank you very much for coming on here. This week, we're doing a territories tribute. We've done a lot of MMA stuff here lately, and we've had a demand to go back to some classic pro wrestling, so that's what we're trying to do. And what a better name to have than Dr. Tom. And I guess, although you'd been around a little while before I first came to see you, I guess my first exposure to Tom Pritchard was in the Continental area in the mid-1980s, but maybe you want to, if you don't mind, give us a little rundown of Tom Pritchard before that time.
Well, I had my first match in October 1979 in Bryan, Texas, and after that, I went to I worked around Louisiana, Oklahoma, and all the Southeast before going to California. And from there it was back to Texas and then to Tennessee, and again back to, Louisiana, up to Oregon, and again back to Tennessee. And it's where I broke my leg in Tennessee. Actually, I broke my ankle in Louisville, Kentucky. It was, here's an irony for you. It was Pat Rose and myself wrestling as the Heavenly Bodies against Stan Lane and Steve Kern, the Fabulous Ones, and I, Stan came over and punched me. I jumped off the apron and broke my ankle. Didn't know it was broke. I wrestled a week on it with a broke ankle and just taped it up every night until my foot just turned completely black. And Bill Dundee said, I better go take a look at it, have it looked at in the hospital. So I did. And when I was at home convalescing, Brad Armstrong called me and asked me if I'd be interested in coming to Pensacola, the Continental Wrestling area. So I said, certainly. And, that's how I got in there. It was, I think fate kind of works in mysterious ways, and that's always, I always felt I was very fortunate that I broke my leg and was able to come to Pensacola.
out in Los Angeles, you teamed with a couple different people, Al Madrill and Chris Adams, early on. Is it that right? Is it that who? I know Al Madrill, you had a won the championship out there a couple times with him.
Yeah, when I first got there, they put Al and myself together, and I was 20 years old, and Mike LaBelle wanted me to be a cowboy. He just figured everybody from Texas was a cowboy, so I was a cowboy with Al Madrill, and then Chris Adams came over from England. And he put us together as well. And while the territory wasn't really doing all that great, I got to tell you, I had a great time being in the business at 20 years old and being out in Los Angeles. I lived in when I first got there, I lived downtown Los Angeles at the 8th and Flower, the Milner Hotel, and then I moved out to Van Nuys, and it was just a paradise for me. I was right in the heart of 10 minutes from Hollywood, really right in the heart of anything you wanted to do, man, and I enjoyed it. And up until that time and afterwards, I just had a blast, man.
You came into, I guess, Continental around late 85, is that right?
And let me see. Yeah.
Well, you got, yeah, because they started you out in the junior heavyweight division, and if memory serves me correct, and I guess that's a long time ago for both of us to remember, but I'm just trying to think back, because I remember you working against Tim Horner for with the belt and a program with him.
Yeah, what happened with that was the thing is, again, Brad called me, and when I was in Louisiana prior to this, I turned heel. Bill Watts asked if I'd ever thought about being a heel, and I said, well, yeah, every day, because I had a pretty sour attitude. A lot of things were going on. I had a lot of things in my personal life were happening, and it always kind of overflowed into my professional life. And so I turned heel on Horner, and they had that tape from Louisiana. Since Continental, it was kind of a built-in angle. So he was the United States Junior Heavyweight Champion, and I came in, and we did the angle there. And from then on, it was one of those things where I really learned a lot about the business. I knew about the business, and I knew what it was, but hang on one second. So Tim was the U.S. champion. Right. We did the angle, and learning about the business really is where it came into play, because I knew how it worked and I knew what was going on, but I realized it wasn't always what you did in the ring that helped you. And I was around a great group of guys, a real good crew in Continental. And the Armstrongs have always been like my best friend in the business, you'd have to say. Yeah. And it really helped me, because when you got in there, you know, everybody wanted to work with you, it seemed like, and that was always an advantage because, you know, I got to ride with those guys and be a part of their plans, and that was where I first got to be a doctor as well.
Yeah, that's, I was going to get into that. The way I remember it was you were doing, weren't you like the ringside physician for maybe Robert Fuller and Jimmy Golden or something? They were doing some kind of angle, and that's, or was that, am I forgetting? Is it, wasn't it something like that?
There's a little part in there that, that kind of played into this, and it goes back to, once again, my breaking my ankle in Tennessee. Sherry Martel was Pat Rose and my manager in Tennessee at the time, and when I broke my ankle, Sherry's roommate was a nurse in Nashville, and she's the one who finally got me in to get an x-ray, and when we found out it was broke, they immediately put me in a cast, and then I stayed with Sherry and Tina, her roommate, for a while, and Tina gave me these doctor's scrubs, and I wore those pretty much for the next 3 weeks. And one day, actually, if you remember correctly, Robert and Jimmy, well, Jimmy Golden, Robert Fuller and Jimmy Golden were wrestling the Rich cousins, Tommy and Johnny. And what happened was they brought a guy in to be their ringside physician, and it was called, he was called Dr. Love.
Right.
Well, they did the angle where they take Johnny's, or maybe it was Tommy's feet to the bottom rope, and then they beat the living hell out of Johnny, made him a bloody mess. Well, then they went on an interview, and there was Dr. Love out front and very prominent. Well, that weekend, it seems like the FBI was looking for Dr. Love, so they called Robert. Robert says, well, I don't know, you know who this guy is. He just came and went. So now they had this angle already shot, no doctor. And I happened to be riding with Jimmy and Robert, and we're talking about it, and I had my doctor pants on. We stopped to get a drink, and Robert says, well, hey, boy, you could be our doctor right there. So that's kind of how that was born, and we started talking about ideas and things like that. So thanks to Robert Fuller, I became a doctor in Alabama.
And I guess that kind of stuck from then on out then.
Yeah, man, but, I mean, it was good because it gave me something to be and put in front of my name. And I'll be honest with you, it was once it kind of came with me, it grew on me, I think. So I was glad.
You ended up, of course, the most famous angle you did in the whole time was the Dirty White Boy hanging angle, where his valet, Kimberly, had suckered you out and you ended up getting hung by Dirty White Boy. What were your thoughts at the time of that angle? Because it was really, for that nowadays, you know, wouldn't be that big a deal, but then that was really pushing the envelope big time.
Well, at that time, too, you have to remember, we have to remember because we were kind of right there in the thick of things. I'd like to say we were really having that, the territory was really on fire, and I don't really think it was on fire, but Eddie Gilbert was booking at that time, and he was looking for something. Tony and I were a couple of guys that just clicked when we got in the ring. You know, you just come across those guys that your favorite opponents that you can get in the ring with and know you're going to have a good match regardless. And that's kind of the way it was with Tony and myself. So we pitched this idea to Eddie, and I had seen Nick Bockwinkel get hung one time in El Paso and thrown around the ring and just looked great. So Eddie wanted something violent and shocking, so we pitched that at him, and he says, well, we need something else. So I said, well, what if he ties my hands or handcuffs me behind my back, my hands behind my back, and drags me to the ring? He says, I love it. Well, I forgot that, well, I didn't forget. I just figured if I was going to die, I might as well do it on TV, right?
That's right.
I just didn't realize that once you cinch that noose in pretty good, I mean, you're gonna choke, and I was choking, man. It was really a mind over matter, I think. But when he had me, he didn't just because when you cinch it up, I mean, there's nowhere to go. And he had to drag me, and then he had to hang me at the ring. And again, it's one of those things I can't say anything because he had to do it. Right. So, you know, it was a cool angle because people could see my hands were behind my back, and there was nowhere to go except get choked. And I'll be honest with you, I got choked.
Yeah. So. The actually, Eddie Gilbert ended up quitting. Benefited you pretty well because you ended up getting the CWF title at the Road to Birmingham because of that, didn't you? Or is that just all wrestling myth? Was that planned all along, or was that because Eddie ended up quitting?
No, that was Eddie's idea all along. And Eddie kept the cards close to his vest. He didn't let a lot of people in on what his ideas were. But Eddie had the idea to make me the champion at Road to Birmingham all along. That was his plans right away. So, but I was glad he did that. I was fortunate. But once again, you know, you look at it, and if you're going to be put in that position, really, that should be a money drawing position. And I got to be honest with you. Again, I don't believe the territory was that much on fire. We were just maintaining back then. So, but I was given the opportunity to go out there and work with different guys and to be put in that spot and to learn how to work in that spot. But again, you know, I think during that time was when the expansion was coming along and people started looking at WWF as if you weren't there, then you weren't really a star. So,
well, I'll ask your opinion because any of the old Continental crew that I have on here, I ask them, and some feel comfortable answering and some don't, and I'll just leave it up to you. But about David Woods, do you consider him as the guy who ultimately killed the territory, or was it just a matter of that's how things were turning and it would have ended up that way anyway?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of how things were going. Ron Fuller stole the territory because he saw it. He knew. Ron was smart.
Oh, yes.
Ron would have known and seen any other way to keep the business alive, he would have kept doing it. But I think Ron saw that things were going the way they were, and you know, the only other way to go was the way he went and get out. David didn't know a lot about the business, but he wanted to learn, and he did bring in Eddie, and he tried to bring in people that should have ran it for him. And I don't think we can look at David Woods and blame him. He was really an inconsequential part, I think. Didn't really play that big of a role in killing the business. At that time, the expansion was already happening, and, you know, Vince was on the run.
Oh, yes. You ultimately, you stuck around Continental pretty much to the end, didn't you, and then went to Memphis?
I did, except it was, I believe I left in August of, I want to say maybe 87 or 88. I was going to Japan for 5 weeks, but I went back to San Antonio to my wife at the time, now my ex-wife, and was going to stay there until I went to Japan, which I did. Then when I got back from Japan, I talked to Robert and talked to some people in Alabama, and business just was really, really bad. And to go back there, you know, crowds had really gotten low, and they weren't that great when I got back.
Right.
So, you know, I decided to stay in Texas, and then, you know, it was one thing led to another, and that's how I wound up going back to Memphis.
And you spent, most of the 90s, I guess, or up to the mid-90s anyway, in Memphis and in Smoky Mountain, where, of course, you had formed the Heavenly Bodies tag team out in Smoky Mountain, originally with Stan Lane and then later with Jimmy Del Rey. And I guess you had worked with Stan Lane quite a bit during your career up to that point.
Had rode with him, you said?
Yeah, I had worked with him.
Yes. Not extensively, but I've known Stan since 1981, I think.
Yeah.
So I'd known him for a while, yeah. He was always an easy call guy and no problems, easy on the head.
Oh, yeah. Everybody has differing opinions of Stan Lane. I personally like Stan, always have, but he's quite the figure outside the ring.
Sure. Yeah, I enjoyed that about him because he was entertaining and very easy for me, man.
Did Cornette put that together, or was that somebody else's idea? I assume Jim Cornette's, but...
For Stan and myself?
Yes.
Did Jim put Stan and myself
together? Right,
yes. That
yes, that's...
Yes, that was a Jim Cornette idea. Yeah, he actually... What happened on that, too, was originally when Dennis left, and Jim just told this story recently as well, mm-hmm. when Dennis left in the Carolina, I was still in Alabama, and Cornette had wanted to get a hold of me to come in and take Dennis's place, but Dusty had already contacted Stan, so...
Oh, that's right. I remember hearing that now. I'm glad you brought that up. Yeah, you were actually slated to go into the Midnight Express.
Right, so Jim... said he wanted to manage Bobby and myself, and then Stan came in, so he managed Bobby and Stan, and then he said, well, now here's the opportunity to get Stan and you together, and that's how that came about. It was a good deal.
How in the world did Jimmy Del Rey get mixed up into this? Because Jimmy Del Rey was always one of those guys who was just kind of under the radar. Jimmy Backlund, originally, he wrestled as, and then really, the biggest thing he'd done career-wise was with the Heavenly Bodies.
Well, you know, it's a little known fact that Kevin Sullivan was in Smoky Mountain at the time, and Sullivan is a guy who recommended Jimmy. And I had no problems with that. Cornette asked me if I did, and I just said, no, I don't really know the guy. I've met him, but I had no problems with that. Oh, that's fine with me. I don't care.
Right.
So, and he came in, and, you know, he was Jimmy. I can describe it. Stan, and Jimmy's Jimmy, but they were two different people, and while Jimmy was fantastic in the ring, you know, we did our separate things outside the ring.
Sure, sure. You ended up, of course, with WWE, and I'm assuming that's because of the Smoky Mountain relationship with WWE at the time. You ended up there and ultimately became one of the Body Donnas and with Chris Candido. And you had to, I guess, you were told or on your own, altered your look somewhat by cutting your hair and going with that. How'd you feel about that?
I'll be honest with you, man. I had some mixed emotions, and I didn't really want to cut my hair at the beginning because I'd had it for so long and it was so easy to hide behind and use as a gimmick.
Sure.
And it really felt naked without it. But it was the opportunity. You know, what happened was our time was up in WWF and we went on and back to Smoky Mountain, but Smoky Mountain had closed and I got a call asking if I'd like to come back and do the deal with Candido. And I said, no, I don't want to cut my hair, man. And they said, well, I guess you don't want a job. And I said, well, maybe cutting my hair wouldn't be so bad. So
I guess that is a motivator.
Yeah, pretty much. So, you know, I did that. And I'll be honest with you, I never got into the team. I loved tagging with Chris. He was great, but there were other issues going on, and I didn't feel it as a Body Donna. We had fun at times, but there were other times where I just dreaded going to work, and that's no fun because then it shows in your work. When you're not having a good time, when you have the apprehension of even being in there, people can tell.
And
that's what was happening with me. I wasn't having as much fun as I used to. I loved being with Chris. He was great. Tammy was Tammy, and she really, she was the queen. You know, she was a diva in the first degree. In fact, she was obviously the first one of that type diva. You know, you had your Liz's and Sherry's and stuff before that, but she was that first little 18-year-old bubbly type. Look at me type thing. And that's how she really was, so that's why she came across so well doing that.
Exactly. And that's really, I guess, she kicked the whole diva movement off, I suppose, as far as the sex object thing goes. How did you move, how did you transition out of the wrestling into the road agent trainer type position? Was there, did you, was there an injury, or was it just a, didn't have anything for you, or was it something you wanted to do? I know, of course, your brother is, does the same thing and has for a while with WWE, Bruce,
right,
Pritchard. And
well, what happened was Chris actually broke his neck in Madison Square Garden one night, and he came back, and he was hurt. He didn't realize how hurt he was, but and he didn't want to go to the hospital, but Dave Hebner actually made him and took him down in this, this, I guess, I don't know, the name of the hospital. It was right in the heart of Manhattan. So you have gunshots, stab wounds, and all kinds of great-looking people there.
Yep.
And Chris found out that night he had a broken neck. Well, he didn't want to tell anybody. He finally wound up telling me, but he would wear a neck brace. And one night, I'll never forget, he went to the ring in a neck brace, and Vince got so pissed off because who could wrestle in a neck brace?
Right.
And there were a lot of other things going on, too, obviously.
Oh, yeah.
Again, he broke his neck, and the Body Donnas were coming to an end as well. And they actually offered Chris an opportunity to train guys, too, but he didn't want to. He still wanted to wrestle, which I understand. But I was, by that time, I was, I think, 34, 30, actually, it was 96, right after the Olympics, because summer 96, so I just getting ready to turn 36, man. And, I was hurting. I wasn't having that good of time, so I figured this was an opportunity to move on and learn something new. And I said, why not? Because, I wasn't getting any younger. I wasn't going to get any bigger. So why not try the training? I knew I could train guys. I'd done a little bit of it in Texas before. And I knew I could, I felt like I could be a good teacher, so. It was Vince presented the opportunity to me. He wanted to get some homegrown talent, some in-house talent, you know, trained by us, and get some of the independent guys out there and bring them over to our side. And that was when the war was with WCW really getting heavy. So
right, and you ended up training most of the biggest stars of the last 10 years. I mean, I think. You were influential in training The Rock and Kurt Angle and all those guys.
Yeah, and here's the thing, too. You know, The Rock did grow up in the business, and he learned it. He's a natural. But he came to us in August of 96 and just to get some seasoning and just to get some ring time. I went on the road with him, too, early on, wore a mask as Dr. X. And it was very... It was a cool time, you know. Same thing with Angle. I had Kurt's actual very first match in, I believe it was New England, that nobody really knows or remembers. But the very first match he had in the ring besides training was up there in New England. And he was a natural as well, especially for being an amateur guy. Most amateur wrestlers, it's the most unnatural thing in the world to be put on your back. But he was. He did. So he knew it. He grasped
if you, out of all the guys you trained while you were up there, can you think of three or four that you really thought should have made it and maybe never did make it a huge impact? Some guys you thought, you know, they've got all the tools and never did just break up to that next level?
Well, you know what? Steve Bradley is a guy that I always said should have got a break because he did have all the tools. He had all the... everything you wanted. He trained when you told him to train. He changed his body. But there's other elements of this business that I try to tell the guys. Sometimes it doesn't always matter, you know, if you can work.
Right.
You know, you really have to. You have to get the right people on your side, and that's like anything in life, really. But Steve Bradley is one of the guys I always point to.
Oddly enough, that's who I was thinking of when I asked that question. I was wondering if you would mention him.
Yeah, he's always the first one on my mind. Bobby Roode is another guy who I remember. I don't know if he trained with us. I trained with him. Actually, I do. Yeah, he did. He came to the tryout in Cincinnati. That's where it was. And he has this natural ability as well. I thought we should have signed him a long time ago. But
yeah, he seems to be doing okay in TNA right now. He's on the verge of getting a pretty decent little push down there.
Right. But the thing is, he's been doing this for a few years when he should have been able to make some money and be groomed in WWE. But again, that's the way things happen. And but those are two guys right off the bat that I can think of that just really have the talent and really should have had an opportunity and weren't. So, anyway, can we stop the tape?
Okay, well, we're going to wrap things up now. I greatly appreciate Dr. Tom being with us today. And I've got to tell you some of my favorite Dr. Tom moments. I can't remember the year for sure. I want to say 87, 88. It was when Continental and Ron Fullard went up to run USA, and you were kind of in between both or whatever with Buddy Landell. And you guys, and Buddy's a good friend of mine. I think a world of Buddy. And you two guys on commentary were just, God, that's two thumbs up.
Wow, was that Continental?
Yeah, I think it was that or USA. I think they were using some USA footage. It was out of Knoxville anyway.
Right.
And I remember several times the two of you would get on there, and it was just, God, it was just great stuff.
Well, it could have been that Buddy and I had been up for a couple of days, and we had been, talking, never stopped talking, and we didn't, I don't know. I think Buddy's a great guy too. I haven't seen him in I actually saw him last year, but yeah, he's another guy that is a character, and he's a real character.
Oh yes, he's had his issues, but I tell you what, he's in my book, he's a pretty stand up guy. So
yeah, I agree.
Well, Dr. Tom, I greatly appreciate you being on here, and anytime you got something going on, by all means, let me know, and we will get it out there for everybody to know about. And your career, it's impossible to cover in 30 minutes, so we're going to have to do this again sometime, most definitely.
Well, I appreciate it, Carl, and I look forward to maybe coming back to Birmingham someday soon as well.
Yep. Well, I look forward to seeing you, and thanks to everybody for listening. Don't forget, tomorrow's show, I believe we're going to do J.D. McKay, who was an independent wrestler out of Mississippi, and he was a longtime roommate and friend of the late Eddie Gilbert.
Whoa, J.D.?
Yes.
Please give J.D. my best.
I certainly will.
Yeah.
J.D. and I, good friends from way back, and look forward to having him in tomorrow. Then Wednesday, we'll have the original Dirty White Boy, Jimmy Powell, back with us, and I believe Thursday or Friday, we'll have Nightmare Ted Allen. So that'll wrap the week up for us. Thanks a lot for listening. Be sure to check us out at DragonKingWrestling.com.
Thank you for listening to the Dragon King Wrestling Audio Show. We would like to remind you to visit our website at DragonKingWrestling.com for daily updates and ordering information on all of our products. You can vote for us at PodcastAlley.com.
And I'll tell you something else, too, is I cannot stand sissies. And I think that Hart is a sissy. Are you a sissy? Are you a sissy? I'm asking you a question.
No, I don't think
so. No, you're not a sissy, are you? Well, do you think that you're tougher than I am?
Oh, I didn't say that. I just said I wasn't a sissy.
Well, I don't think that this man right here is a sissy either. And I think that you're just pretty damn tough and one of the toughest people that I've ever wrestled. And I'll give a devil his dues and I'll pay him to him, Lawler. You're as tough a man as I've ever met. I don't especially like you. And I want to ask you something. Are you a sissy? Are you a sissy?
I think.
Let me say something, Lawler. Are you a sissy or not?
Hey, come on.